Hello and welcome to this month's Sales Transformation Mastermind coaching session. I am so excited to be here. We've had some amazing conversations in the forum. And just like I always do when I open up this conversation, I want to start by saying if you are not in the forum, if you are not asking questions, if you're not getting involved, then you are missing out. There is so much great content, so many great ideas, and you get access to this community, you get access to me. I am constantly checking this thing, making sure that I'm answering people's questions, so get in there if you have any questions. I'm thrilled with some of the questions that we've had this month, and so I want to focus today on an issue that I think a lot of people have, which is really focusing around prospecting. It's focused in particular around really starting that conversation with prospects. I find that this is one of the areas that people struggle with most, is how do I really start that conversation? And the challenge that most salespeople have when it comes to starting that conversation is they don't really have a scripted approach for starting that conversation. And so when I ask people, I'll say, you know, tell me how you would start a conversation with a prospect, or tell me, just pretend that I'm a new prospect, how would you engage me in a conversation? And most people jump into some rambly, jumbly junk that ends up ultimately leading to nowhere. And it just sounds like them going on for about 8 minutes, and they never once ask me a question, they never once engage me, and they're doing a lot of bragging and talking about how great their company is and all of the features and benefits. And the reality is that this stuff doesn't work in today's marketplace. We need to have the first 25 seconds of our conversation tight. It needs to be fully memorized. It has to be rehearsed. We can't just leave this up to fate and hope that we can wing it, whether we're on a prospecting call, whether we're face-to-face, whatever it is. So with that said, I want to start out with a question that comes from Steven, who's been getting really involved in the forum, and he must be in my Sales Strategy Academy because his opening play is pretty tight, and so I want to jump right into his question. So he says, Mark, I'm selling to storefront business owners in New York City. And usually when I'm talking to these business owners, I'm getting interrupted by their customers who are going to the counter to pay them. I'm not in an office setting, selling situation. I feel like I'm getting rushed to get to the point. After I say my opening play and ask Danny these issues ring true to you, the prospect answers with, you know, how does this work? And I then lose the opportunity to ask the pain-invoking questions. What would you recommend? And so there's a couple of things here. First of all, Stephen, I answered some of this in my explanation, but I do think that we have to look at this, dissect this question from a couple of areas. First of all, this reminds me very much of when I first started selling. When I first started my original marketing business, when we first got started, we were selling to convenience stores and gas stations. So a very similar type of a clientele, and the owners were often behind the register. You know, these were successful business owners, but they, just to save cost or because they were there anyways, they would be behind a register. And so that was obviously challenging because it's really difficult to be selling to someone when they're talking to customers and they're ringing up orders or whatever it is. So a couple of thoughts. One is you've got to make sure you're doing your prospecting at the least busy times of day. So I don't know exactly when New York City storefront business owners are busy. Obviously depends on what they're selling. You know, let's just say it's a florist. When are they going to be busiest? They're going to be busiest in probably in the early morning, you know, in that 9 o'clock rush when people are on their way to work and they're maybe getting there. And then it's probably quiet from about 9:30. And again, I'm making this up, but I'm just, you know, let's just pretend that this is accurate. And then it's probably quiet from 9:30 till about lunchtime. And so that's a good time to be doing your prospecting. And then it's probably busy again during lunchtime, as it is with a lot of these types of businesses. Certainly if you're selling to restaurants, then you've got to avoid those rush times. And then it probably is quiet again from about 1:30 till 4. And then after 4 is when it's busy because people are going into the florist to buy flowers for their spouse and all that. So we want to make sure that we're giving ourselves the best opportunity to be prospecting at a time when our prospects are most available. And so now, for those of you that are selling in the B2B space, these times are actually likely to be the exact opposite of what I just mentioned. If you're selling to CEOs of companies, you've got to think, when are these people least busy? And the answer is usually that they're least busy early in the morning. A CEO is typically at the office at 7 a.m., and he or she is less likely to be interrupted by meetings and all that between 7 and about 8:30. They're less likely to have a gatekeeper. And then throughout the day, they tend to be pretty busy. But then after about, 5 o'clock is when, or 5:30 is when things start to cool down again. And that's also a good time to be calling. Saturdays are a good time to be calling on CEOs, right? So regardless of what your market is, you've got to be giving yourself the best opportunity to avoid those rush times. Now, having said that, and I hope everyone's strategy changes maybe a little bit, or at least you rethink what you're doing. If you're already doing it, great. But if not, this is definitely something we want to be rethinking as a result, is when are we actually doing our prospecting? Because that really matters in terms of connecting and in terms of actually getting them into a conversation. Now, back to Stephen's question, he's literally dropping into stores. He is actually going face to face. So these are just like cold calls, but they're not using the phone, which probably a lot of people listening to are expecting, are doing. So we need to remember that it's basically the same script that we want to be using with our cold call. And so we want to be sure that we're scripting out that first 30 seconds of a conversation. And what I'm hearing Stephen saying is, I'll go through my opening play, and I'm going to assume that it's an opening play that's the right one, or that's effective, that we've all worked on. And then he's basically saying that he goes through his opening play, and then the guy's like, yeah, I'm busy. Like, so how does this thing work? Like, tell me how it works. And I don't know what Stephen sells, but that's a really common response. And so what we need to do is we need to be prepared for that response. Because, when you're selling to a busy business owner, it's not that they want to be rude. It's just they're like, okay, like, let's get to the point here. I just, if you've got something that can help me, I'm open to it. And so what we need to do is we need to be prepared after our opening play to have some kind of a backup contingency that makes them feel like we've just answered that question, but then re-engages them back into a conversation. So if I'm doing my opening play to a prospect, and in my case, I'm talking about sales. So I'm like, I'm a sales strategist, and I work with organizations to dramatically increase sales. Typically, clients are coming to me when their conversion rates are below what they expect. They're just simply not getting as in front of as many prospects as they'd like, or lastly, they're just not seeing the ROI on their sales efforts. Do any of these issues ring true to you? And then the prospect comes back and is like, yeah. I mean, so like, how does your service work? Now, that would throw a lot of salespeople off. And so what you just have to have is you have to have an approach that basically pulls that conversation back on track so you go into that disqualification conversation. Because a lot of people will when the prospect says, oh, yeah, we do have that, how does this service work? A lot of salespeople will go right into pitch mode. They'll be like, oh, well, okay, so what we do is this and that. And it's like, just because the prospect asked this one little question, which isn't necessarily meant to be disruptive, it threw the salesperson off. So the simple response to a prospect is to say, in my case, I'd say, well, so I'm a sales strategist, like I mentioned, and, there's typically a lot of ways that I can approach an engagement with a client. What would you say is the biggest sales challenge that you're facing right now? And now what I've done is I've turned that conversation back on track. I've turned that conversation back into the direction that I want it to be going into, which is that I want them talking about their challenges. And I don't want me to be doing any presenting. So I've given like a little bit of information, which I'd already said. So I feel like he feels like, okay, he's answering my question, but then he's basically justifying or explaining why he can't just give up an immediate pitch right now, which is, we approach a lot of different client engagements in a lot of different ways. I'm curious, what would you say is your biggest sales-related challenge right now? And what that's going to do is it's going to push them to get back on track, and they're going to say, oh, well, we feel like our salespeople just simply aren't bringing in the sales that we believe they should be. And then I say, oh, well, tell me more about that. Right? And now I've engaged them in the disqualification conversation. This is really, really key. This is gold right here that I'm giving you, because what I'm doing is I'm always insisting that we stay on track, we stay on the sales process. And I think a lot of times when we're new to this content, we can get thrown off by we expected them to just say, oh, yeah, I do have one of those challenges, and here's what it is. But instead, they didn't get there. And so we freak out in our head, and we're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And so we jump off the process, and then we go and we kind of wing it, and we start presenting, and we're just like jumping all around, and then, we're in trouble. And so that's actually what Steven says. So Steven and I have had a back and forth, and I want to just give you a little bit more color on what he said when I asked, basically, what are you saying right now in response to their pushback? And he says, so when I adopted my new opening play, I haven't been getting pushback immediately afterwards. I've been skipping over the disqualification questions out of bad habit. It's when I get a business owner to listen to me, I get excited and tell them what I do, and it's only after my presentation when I hear, "Why don't you come back next week, or I'll call if I'm interested." Right? So this is exactly what he's doing, which is, and by the way, Stephen, you're not alone. I just want you to know, you're not alone. This is what a lot of us do. We get freaked out. We're like, oh my God, I'm so excited. This person's actually, they've got a pulse. They at least appear to have some semblance of money because they're not, on the street, and they're talking to me. And so like suddenly we go into like, oh, well, we can do this or we can do that. And it's like you've just skipped the entire disqualification conversation. And so you're out of the system. And so what we need to do is we need to make it a rule for ourselves that I always stay in the system. I do everything that I can to stay in the system. And if a customer or a prospect is insisting that we get out of the system, then I'm going to fight to get back into the system. And I mean, to the point where like you'd rather see a sale fall apart early on than go out of the system. And you're saying right now, I know some people are listening to this and they're saying, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. I mean, if I can keep a sale together, if I can salvage a sale, then I'm going to salvage the sale. Well, I'm not saying that you kill the sale. I'm saying that you do everything, you hold your feet to the fire and you get back into the system. Because as soon as you leave the system is when it falls apart. That's exactly what Steven's saying he's doing. He's basically saying he talks to the customer, he gives his opening play, and then the customer pulls him out and is like, hey, okay, so what do you do? Just tell me, just give me like the quick, what do you actually do? And then he goes, oh, well, so we do this, that, this, and this, and this, and that, and that, and then this, and that. And then he goes, so how's that sound? And the customer's like, oh, yeah, well, that sounds good. Why don't you come by next week? Or you know what? I'll give you a call if I'm interested, right? So he's lost the sale. So you're gonna lose the sale when you go out of the system. So you might as well fight like a rat to stay in the system to get back on track. And that's when a customer says to me after I've said my opening play, and they're like, oh yeah, okay, well, so just tell me like what, give me an example of what you do. And I'll say, oh geez, I have so many different examples. Just to get a sense of, where I should be guiding this conversation, what would you say is the biggest sales related challenge that you're dealing with right now? Silence. And let him or her come back with, oh, well, we've been dealing with this or we're struggling with that. And then my response is not to say, oh, well, okay, so I have the perfect example for you. Instead, it's to say, tell me more about that. Can you give me an example of what this has looked like? What have you done to try to fix it? Right now, I'm back into my system and I just stay in my system. And what you're going to find is that when people start to feel like you're taking them in the right direction, they're less likely to try to buck. You think of like the bucking bronco. They're not going to be bucking you. Now, if distractions come along and they're talking to and a customer comes along, I mean, that's tricky. I mean, this is the reality of certain types of selling situations. But it happens to all of us to some degree. Sometimes an assistant walks in a CEO's office or an employee, or I mean, there's a million things that can happen. I mean, this is just the way sales is. We can't expect it to be perfect, and that's why to some degree it's a numbers game. But we're creating value by getting into those disqualification questions. So one of the things that I said to Steven is never skip those disqualification questions. That's everything. That is the sales process. That is what we have to be doing. And so every component of this process is, it starts, the funnel starts with getting people engaged in that conversation around those disqualification questions. So everything has to lead to that. So I hope that is useful for everyone here who's listening to this because it's so key, right? I mean, there's literally, when you think about it, there's really no more important component of the system than this. Because if you go off track here, everything else falls apart. It's all done. It all falls apart. And so we can't allow it to fall apart there because then just the whole rest of the process, you might as well just stop listening to anything that I ever teach. Because if you don't get people into that conversation, then the sale is you're in Never Never Land. So we've got to be really tight up front. And that's why it goes back to, which I'm going to talk about in a second as well, making sure you have your opening play memorized. So that way, when it's memorized, I know at first you're going to be super scared saying it out loud and you're going to be nervous and all that. But once you get used to it, then you don't have to think about what you're saying. And so you can really key up and focus on what the prospect is saying. And so you're never afraid of what they're going to say. And this takes practice. I mean, it took me a long time to get to the point where I was fully and completely competent. And then, of course, it took a lot longer to get to mastery. But now, there is legitimately nothing that a prospect can say to me that is going to completely, that will ever throw me off because I've heard it. And I also remember, at the end of the day, the worst thing that can happen is that the prospect throws me out of their office. So the prospect tells me to screw off. And you know what? I don't care. I'll sleep like a baby that night because I know that, you know what? That was not meant to be. Or maybe I'll learn something, which is just as good. So, it just doesn't matter. So we've got to just remember none of this matters that much. When Steven walks into a convenience store or a grocery store in Manhattan, and the customer gets really pissed at him for some reason, you know what? Who cares? Wait, is the guy gonna go on the internet and write about how Steven is the biggest jerk ever? No. The guy's busy. He's not gonna waste his time doing that. He's gonna forget about Steven. Steven could probably show back up in a week and the guy's probably already forgotten who he is. So let's not take this stuff too seriously. So that's a question from Steven. I love it, Steven. There's a lot more that we talked about in terms of the specifics of his disqualification questions and all that, and he made a commitment to really memorizing those disqualification questions. Which I'm glad that he's doing, and I really challenge everyone here to be memorizing those questions. If you don't know the exact questions, if you're not even entirely sure what I'm talking about, I don't want to get into that in this. I think Steven has to be a member of the Sales Strategy Academy, which is something that anyone here can get involved with. It's the kind of the complete A to Z program that I have, which you can buy in the portal. But even if you don't want to get that, you can still get access to what those questions look like by going into the Quick Training Library, which you do have access to as a member of this program, and just search, use the search function for questions, and you're going to find a bunch of different types of questions that you can be asking of prospects to make sure that you're really fully, not just qualifying, but actually disqualifying people that are not a fit. So that's really key. So I'm psyched that Stephen is implementing this, and I think that the results are going to be fantastic. I want to answer one question just because these questions frustrate me more than anything else, but I do want to answer it because I know a lot of people. People ask me this stuff all the time. So this one comes from Luke, who actually never responded to my answer. So he's probably already off doing something else. But he did ask. He says, "Mark, does game plan selling actually work for door-to-door sales?" And I thought it was just an appropriate one to share because we just went through talking about it. And I just want to say about this because I think that it's I'm throwing Luke under the bus here, but it's fine. Luke, I hope you hear this so that way it inspires some action. But I think so often we think that what we're doing in sales is so different from everyone else. And I just want to share with you some insight that I've gathered in the nearly 20 years I've been doing this, is that there are very few exceptions to this. There are some, but for the most part, sales is sales. And that's when you are selling a product to a consumer or to a business, there are some nuances, but for the most part, it is the same thing. And so we have to stop letting ourselves off the hook and having all this, what my mentor used to call head trash about, oh, well, what I do is so different. Because I promise you, what you do is not very different than the other people that are listening to this program. Some people knock on the door, other people dial. But it's still the same interaction, whether you're on the phone or whether you're face to face. We can't be overthinking this stuff because the reality is it's not different. What Steven is doing going into a convenience store of a Manhattan business owner versus what someone else is doing when they're just making a prospecting dial, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing. Yes, everyone's busy. Business owners are busy. CEOs are busy. Consumers are busy. Everyone's busy nowadays. So don't tell me that your buyers are busier, because they're probably not. Yeah, if you're talking about a florist who has to manage the business and has to run the register and has to do the QuickBooks and all that stuff, yeah. Is that person really busy? Yeah. But so is the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. They're busy in different ways, but they're both very busy. So I think we have to get past, like, hey, what I'm doing is different from what these other people are doing. Because realistically, it's not. There are a couple of very, very minor exceptions, but otherwise it's the same. So, Luke, I've answered your question in the forum and I'm answering it here, and I hope that you go out and implement and stop worrying about whether what you do is different than everyone else's. Now, this last question that I want to answer, which I just think is great, comes from Connor, who is a newbie in this program. And he asked a question which I just think is very savvy and smart. So he writes, "Hi Mark, thanks for all the advice. I sell an artificial intelligence solution. So my opener is, we are an artificial intelligence company and we help companies increase sales dramatically by finding their ideal customers. Clients come to us when they're struggling to increase sales, when they want higher quality leads, or when they want to improve conversion rates. Tell me, George, do any of these issues ring true to you?" So that's his opening. That's his opening play, which we're going to break down a little bit. But then he says, "The issue I'm having in my head is that our solution is the equivalent to putting a turbo on a BMW engine. By that, I mean a lot of my clients have a successful business already. Their marketing teams are already working well, and so our AI, artificial intelligence solution can improve their results dramatically. But my problem is that, is this a challenge? When your solution adds to or improves on something, how do I make a client feel some pain?" I think you may come across this a lot when you sell sales training to successful sales teams. Would love your insight. So there's a lot here that's great. And so I will agree with Connor that he's right, that the savviness of his solution means that the savviness of what he's selling is so sophisticated that his buyers are likely to be very savvy and sophisticated buyers, which also means that they're probably very successful. And so his question is basically like, if I'm selling to someone who's successful, do they really have challenges? And the answer is unequivocally yes. There's no such thing as someone who doesn't have challenges. I mean, just think of it at its absolute logical extreme. Take a Fortune 500 company that's doing billions and billions of dollars. They may be very savvy in that they've got, layers of management and that they've been successful and they're doing well. But the reality is that when the CEO looks at that organization, there's some critical challenges that he or she is freaking out about all the time. Maybe not freaking out there, maybe not losing sleep because he or she, the CEO isn't worried about losing his or her job, but they're constantly looking at parts of the business and they're saying, man, this area really could use improvement, or that area could really use some improvement. So let's first acknowledge that every business has challenges, every company has challenges. Having said that, I think that Connor's opening play, one thing is that the challenges that he mentioned are a little bit too broad, in my opinion. Because when you're selling to a savvy buyer, which by the way, some people here are not selling to, maybe your buyers are just, they're struggling in ways that are very simple and basic and obvious, and so maybe you don't need to have a hyper-specific opening play, but I think in the case of Connor, and I want to share this because I think it's really valuable in case you ever get to this, is that with Connor, I think he does need to be specific in his opening play. So that way, when he's selling to the CEO or the chief sales officer or the VP of sales, which is my sense what he's selling to, that person is going to say, oh yeah, like I get this. It's not just, yeah, our sales are down. It's we've got systems in place, yet we feel like we're not in overdrive. We feel like we could be doing much better given everything we already have in place. So it's not like his clients aren't saying we have chaos and so we need someone to come in and clean up the chaos. No. That's not what his ideal buyer probably doesn't deal with chaos. They probably have tremendous systems in place. But with those systems in place, he feels that VP of sales is saying, I feel like we should be doing better, or we could be doing a lot better. So we need to, I think, recraft Connor's opening play. And so I'm going to give you an example. I'm just going to read his one more time, and then I'm going to read to you what I have done to change it. And I think a couple of the things that I want you to note in the difference between the two versions is, one is I think Connor uses a lot, I think he has a lot of wasted language that doesn't really add to it, and I think it's broader. And by the way, this is not going to be perfect what I've come back with, because I don't know exactly what he sells, but I think I can generally get the idea. So let me give you his opening play again, his one. His initial ones, which is, we are an artificial intelligence company and we help companies increase sales dramatically by finding their ideal customers. Clients come to us when they're struggling to increase sales, when they want higher quality leads, or when they want to improve conversion rates. Tell me, John, do any of these challenges ring true to you? So that was his. And now what I've done is I've tightened his up, I think, and I'm going to share with you mine that I think is better. First of all, I don't think you would call yourself an artificial intelligence company because that just sounds very broad. So that one I struggled with. I don't know what kind of company you call yourself. You should call yourself, but that does not strike me as the ideal nomenclature to use. So I skipped that because I don't know what you'd call yourself. But I wrote this. We help clients dramatically increase sales by leveraging artificial intelligence to identify their exact ideal customers. Clients typically come to us when they've already got an optimized sales funnel, but they're struggling to increase sales. They're getting complaints from the sales team about poor quality sales leads, or finally, they're just frustrated with subpar conversion rates. Do any of these challenges ring true to you? So that was what I came back with for him. And I think what he'll find is if he uses this, this is much more likely to connect with the type of person who he's selling to. Because remember, he's not, you know, a lot of times my rule for an opening play is it's got to be really simple. It's got to be something that an eighth grader can understand. But he's selling to someone who's probably pretty savvy, whether it's the CEO or the chief sales officer. Like, he can use some jargon and buzzwords. Not, I don't want him to get crazy here, but I do think that he can be a little bit more targeted. And so let me just break down what I said. So we help clients dramatically increase sales by leveraging artificial intelligence to identify their exact ideal customers. So this is a real point for someone in this position, is that everyone wants to leverage artificial intelligence. That's a thing that everyone wants to do now in that space. But it's more importantly, what is it doing? And what it's doing is it's helping them identify their exact ideal customers, which is something that these people are, they're freaking out all the time trying to make sure that they're selling to the right people. So I think that's really powerful. And then typical opening play language, which is clients come to us when, and then what I'm suggesting here for Connor is that we want to acknowledge that his clients are already doing things right. So clients come to us when they already have optimized sales funnels, but are struggling with challenge A, challenge B, challenge C. And that's really important because it's basically saying our clients typically come to us when they've got it all together, but they're still struggling to increase sales, or they're getting complaints from the sales team about poor quality leads, or they're frustrated with subpar conversion rates. So you can see these challenges are going to be very specific. And these are things that this VP of sales has heard. They're getting complaints. The right person is getting complaints from the sales team about sales leads not being good quality, or they're noticing, you know, the conversion rates aren't where we would like them to be. These types of things are going to be something that will really connect with the buyer. And then lastly, just closing it out like in any opening play, do any of these issues ring true to you, right? So what I love about Connor here is that he's already, I mean, he's clearly systematized his opening play, which is great. And we all need to do that. And by the way, if you're wondering, how do I put together an opening play? I have a bunch of videos in the Quick Training Library on, I don't know if it's under opening play, it might be under opening play, or just start, conversation. So it's like starting, how to start that conversation. And I definitely have some content on creating your opening play. You need to have this scripted, you need to ultimately memorize it. So that's my thought for Connor. I think he's obviously on a great path. I think he's going to be really successful with this. So it really just requires some tweaking and making sure that you're laying out challenges that are really going to connect with that prospect. So Connor, for you specifically, what I'd like to see is that, you know, obviously you can just take what I put, which I think will work well, but I would even suggest tightening it up a little bit more, because to just say, you know, struggling to increase sales, I'd love to see something more specific than that, because I think who you're selling to, yeah, of course they're struggling to increase sales. They want to increase sales, but like in what way? And in what way are you solving that? And so then take the challenge that they're struggling with right now that you really solve, and put it in there. And so I think for everyone here is to really make sure that the challenges you mentioned in your opening play are really going to be relevant to them. So I hope that that's useful for everyone listening to it. And I think that, you know, I hope the takeaway from this conversation is that we need to systematize, we need to have a process, and really you need a script, especially for that first 25 seconds. I know some people always say to me, you know, I don't like scripts. I don't, you know, it's like, hey, if you don't like scripts, that's to your detriment, because I've never met a great actor or actress who says, you know, I just really don't like scripts. That's not how it works. You need to have a script. Once you've mastered the script, then there are actors and actresses like Claire Danes or great comedians, you know, whether it's Will Ferrell or these people who are known for sometimes going a little bit off script. But the reason they were able to go off script is because they started with the script and then they started to adjust it. But even that, I mean, we're talking about the best in the world. Most actors and actresses don't go off script. So there's no need to ever go off script. Just use the freaking script. I know I do. I very rarely go off script, and I think as a result, that's one of the reasons I've been very successful, is I've been very systematic with my script and I don't stray. So my challenge to you is, what are one, two, maybe three takeaways from this session today that you're going to implement? What are you going to do as a result of this conversation? Go make it happen. And I look forward to hearing your successes, your concerns, your questions in the forum. Get in there, get asking questions, answer questions, whatever it is. It's a really awesome community of people, and you also get direct access to me. I feel like sometimes, people email me asking me for advice, and I never give advice over email because it's so annoying to give one person advice by email. But I will do it in this forum because it becomes content. When I answer the question, then it's something that someone else can go look at and learn from. So I will answer your questions in this forum because it's so powerful and it's useful, not just for you, but for other people who are reading this. So I cannot wait to hear your questions, and we'll talk next month.